everybody. Welcome back. Thank you very much for tuning in. You're listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. I'm Colin. I'm here with Dom. Dom, how's it going?
It's going well. How are you?
Doing very well. We are back today to preview the cast and the twists and everything we know so far about Survivor 29, San Juan del Sur, : Blood versus Water.
Yeah, a.k.a. Survivor 29 for all future purposes, by the way.
Yes, I'm on board with that very much. Before we get going, one thing I want to flag up is something I know we briefly talked about possibly doing last time we spoke, and we're definitely going to do it, which is we're going to be updating. I know we're in the middle of BB16 right now. Once that's over, we're going to come back and update our top 10 Big Brother North America players of all time. And so very much looking forward to that. And I know there is one other thing that we have coming up that I'll let you tell people about.
Yeah, just quickly on the Big Brother thing, like the last one we did was just after BB14, and you wouldn't think much has happened since then, but we've had two seasons of Big Brother Canada and two seasons of Big Brother US, and all four of those seasons have had some very capable players who are going to be in that discussion in some form or another, so there is actually going to be a lot to talk about there, I think. As for the Survivor thing, for lack of a better word, that's coming up, I don't want to hype that up too much because it's not anything too special, but it's going to be something a bit different, and we'll give you more details on that when it comes up. And I know that sounds kind of cryptic, but that is what it is for now.
Well, to make it less cryptic, and I don't think it's giving anything away by saying it, it's just going to be the two of us.
Okay.
Well, I know a lot of people have been tweeting at me like, oh, it's some retrospective with Boston Rob or whatever, with Sandra.
You've done a great job of like accidentally elevating people's expectations already.
I know. I was just like, hey, be aware that we got something cool coming up. And everyone's like, oh my God, it's going to be the greatest thing.
It's cool insofar as it involves just the two of us. So that will put a limit on your hype for that.
Yeah, it's going to top out around a 4 out of 10. So, sure. All right, Dom, anything else we want to bring up before we get going on the cast?
I don't think so.
All right, well, the way we're going to be doing this today is we're going to start by going through the cast. And then we're going to talk about, I still haven't looked into how the tribes are split apart yet. I will take a look at that before we talk about it, but of course that would be something that like a good podcaster would have done by now, so of course that's off the table for me. I think the big thing of interest, I'm so excited about this, Dom can see me grinning over here like a bastard. The way that we're going to be doing this and going through the cast is something we've never done before, but I was thinking, you know, with this cast, we don't know anything about any of these people for the most part. You know, obviously know who John Rocker is, and I guess there are a couple other people that are allegedly stunt casting. We'll get there when we get there. How are we going to get there? Good question. What order are we going to take them in? We're going to draw names out of a hat. And for those curious, I'm so excited about this. First of all, for inquiring minds, it is a hat I got during the World Cup. It was given to me. It is a Netherlands hat. And I've written down the names of all of the pairs on post-it notes and folded them with the sticky side in, so there will be no cheating here.
I'm not quite sure why I'm so excited about this, but I'm glad that you are, because one of us has to be, I suppose.
I love it. I think this is going to be so fun. Dom, do you have a guess as to who's going to be the first pair picked?
Well, I'm going to be like 1 out of 10 either way, aren't I? So I guess 1 out of 9.
1 out of 9.
We should talk about that quickly. Yeah. So the first pair we're going to talk about are the pair that's not actually going to feature on the season, and that is... Do you even know their names? It's like So and...
I sure don't know their names. I want to point out, this is not an officially hat-sanctioned pair. This is not the official first hat drop. But yes, let's get into that. I had this towards the end, but let's talk about that because for the first time, we do have a disparity in gender. I think it's 10 guys and 8 girls, right? Because a female-female pair got pulled.
Yeah, that's right.
The only thing I know about them...
Actually, I guess like Survivor Fiji, but aside from that, yeah, this is...
Sure.
Again, and obviously they take care to ensure that you have that gender balance each season, and so the only way it ever gets thrown off is when you have something come up at the very last minute like this.
Right, yeah. Is that going to impact things in any kind of substantial way for you? I assume it's going to be 5 guys starting on each tribe?
Yeah, I imagine so. One thing that kind of confuses me, I guess, is I imagine they would have had like a pair of alternates there or something. Like you have to be prepared for that kind of eventuality, right?
Well, so, I think the problem with that is... And I know we did see Candace and John Cody come in during the first Blood versus Water, and sorry for cutting you off, but when you have, I don't think they're going to fly out alternates for female-female, father-daughter, mother-daughter, you know, like they have so many people that could realistically have to quit, and then they don't want to bring out alternates for every possible thing.
Yeah, and also I guess when it's returning players, or at least when one half of that pair is a returning player, they've been through the mill before, like they know what's going on, and so you can call them up with 3 days' notice and say, okay, look, we need you out here, this is when your flight's leaving, this is what you have to bring, and they know what the deal is.
Right.
You don't have to, like, suddenly educate someone at the last moment.
Yeah, I guess I just kind of wrapping on this, unless you have anything else to add, I don't think this is going to be a big difference maker at all. If anything, I'm glad. If anything, I'm glad, just because it's going to give more people more screen time.
I guess so. Although, do you know any details about the pair that did get kicked off, other than that they are female-female?
Just what I've heard from you, which is I believe they were some a pair of Asian sisters.
Yeah, that's right. I think they were in their mid-20s, possibly early 20s. I'm not quite sure about that. And for the very spoiler-averse among you, I suggest tuning out for about 10 seconds. But apparently the rumor is that one member of that pair is being drafted back for season 30. Perhaps more on that story in 6 months or so.
All right, interesting. We'll keep an eye out for that. All right, let's dive into the hat. First pair, first item up for bids. Here we go. Okay, this is taking longer to...
And by the way, while Colin is doing this, if you hear like this frantic mouse scrolling sound in the background, that's because this is like frustrating any kind of order we try to impose on this. So now we're going to be like clicking back and forth through the notes. And it's going to be a complete clusterfuck, but that's just how we like it.
Yeah, and sorry, this is taking longer than I anticipated to undo the post-it note. However, I do have it right here. First pair we're going to talk about, John and Jacqueline. So I think they're the couple that's in their mid-20s. I think he's 26, she's 25. He was apparently the quarterback at Michigan State. I would not know because college sports are a total joke. So I guess first impressions of John and Jacqueline, what's your take?
I didn't really have any. Like, I think in common with most of the rest of this cast, they don't really make a strong impression on you either way. Like, obviously, you cast the 20s for a certain reason. You cast John Walker because you know everyone's going to hate him going in. But part of the reason that they stand out is not just because of their over-the-top personalities. It's because no one else in the cast does. And I think John and Jacqueline really epitomize that, where they are the kind of standard white bread couple that you'd expect to have on a season like this.
Yep. They are right in there as a 5 out of 10 for me. Like, I could see there being upside. I can see them being totally vanilla and boring. I could see them conceivably winning. I could see them conceivably being just John and Candace 2.0.
Yeah, just running down their bio quickly so we do have some idea of who they are. One quote immediately from their YouTube bio was, Jacqueline says, "We have a really interesting background. He played football for Michigan State and I was Miss Michigan." So immediately I'm thinking, that's not interesting at all. Like, especially in Survivor terms. Like, you are a model and you are on Survivor. Like, you've never seen this before. But they managed to make me feel guilty about my cynicism because in the next sentence, Jacqueline started talking about how she was born without a uterus. And so obviously she wasn't able to have kids. And so the two of them have been going through their struggle for surrogacy and how and winning the money would help them accomplish that. So I imagine that that's the angle that they were going for. Although, interestingly, Jacqueline said that the person she was most like was Jeffra, which is a whole hilarious answer in and of itself. But Jeffra, as we mentioned, or as I had to tell you last season, and this isn't through any fault of your own, but because they failed to mention it on the show, Jeffra actually had a similar thing where she went through cervical cancer. And so I optimistically was hoping that that's why Jacqueline gave that answer. But given that they didn't actually play with that storyline around Jeffra, I'm not sure that they're going to do that with Jacqueline either. So I don't know.
Well, I think this is how I could see them doing that and including this is if they go deep, I could see them bringing this up early and often if a final tribal council scenario is in play where, hey, if I get the money, this is what I'm going to do. Like, we're going to start a family with this money. This is something we both very much want and need, and you guys could make that happen.
Oh, of course. But what I mean is the editors aren't going to use this as like an establishing thing to make you like John and Jacqueline right out of the gate.
Okay, but I would say, just kind of applying that logic, because I totally agree with you that if it's never going to come into play, they could easily just sweep it under the rug. I think if it does get flagged up, that could mean very good stuff for one of the two of them going into the, like, end game.
Yeah, I guess so, but my reservation about them isn't that when they get to the end, they're going to have a tough time winning, just because I'm not sure we can really definitively say that about any of them at this point. It's more that for either of them to get there, I think would be a struggle, just based on what I've seen of them so far.
Yeah, that's true. They do seem willing to vote each other out, which I like. There are a lot of couples this season that seem willing to vote each other out, which I'm sure is something after the whole Laura and Sierra thing last time, Survivor was bending over backwards to find people who would be voting each other out.
Yeah, we saw a fair amount last time as well, although then because you had returning players who are going to be a bit more cutthroat about that sort of thing, I imagine, and then by extension their partners would be too. So I guess it is more impressive to have that quality in an all newbie cast.
Yeah. And just quickly, you know, she compared herself to Jeffra. John compared himself to my boyfriend Hayden Moss. I don't know that these are people who've seen more than Blood versus Water and Kageyan.
Yeah, I think the actual logic behind Jackson's choice there was, I saw the most recent season, Jeffra is blonde, there's my pick, nailed it.
And I think she probably did nail it.
Yeah. So I think that's pretty much all we have to say about them. Any predictions about where they're going to place or how well they might do?
I think they're both favorites to make the merge. I think in practice, one of them will go out. Are they the couple who wants to align with other couples, by the way, or is that someone else?
I don't know.
They are the couple who wants to align with other couples. Okay, they are. I see that now in my notes, which I thought was interesting, and I think is actually not a bad strategy, because if you're all kind of in the same boat, then there's no real difference maker.
Well, yeah, this is something that we touched on back in our Season 27 preview. Like, I think that is the most natural approach to take in a game like this, where if you know you have these pre-packaged alliances in place, why not just join them together and have this block which you know is going to be tight and which you know is going to have a pretty sizable numbers advantage?
Yeah, so I mean, just a good idea, or at least a good impulse for them to have. Just quickly going back, because I gave kind of a half bullshit answer. I could see both of them doing, like, I don't think both of them are simultaneously going to do well, but I think if one of them goes early, the other one could do very well.
Yeah, my concerns about them individually are, John seemed to think of himself in quite glowing terms. Like he said, he's a very sociable person, and he's very good in challenges and everything else. And everyone is going to say that to an extent, and if you don't believe that, then, you know, why even go on the show? Mm-hmm. But John did it in such a way that suggests that he actually does really sincerely think that. Like, he is going in with a sense of confidence, which I'm not quite sure is justified. Whereas Jacqueline maybe had the opposite problem, where she came across as reserved in a way that I think people might view as uptight. And not because she's seeking to antagonize him or anything, but just if she's not willing to assert herself early on, then I think she could easily just like fade into the background and no one really picks up on her or is going to want her there.
Are either of these two drawing dead in your mind?
I won't say drawing dead, like that's a very bold claim to make at this stage, but I wouldn't, spoiler alert for when we come to do our draft, I wouldn't have either of them that high at this point.
Okay, I think that's right where I'm at on those two as well. All right, let's go back in the hat. Here we go. Next people up for bid. Dom, kill some time for like 5 seconds while I peel this open. No, no need, no need. Here we go. We got it. Ooh, I'm very excited to talk about these two. Jeremy and Val.
Where do you want to start with these two?
This is where I want to start with these two. Here's the first hot take of this season preview podcast. I think Jeremy and Val have the highest combined equity of any pair.
Yeah, I agree with you, and that's going to prove to be a highly depressing fact for me later for reasons that we'll get into. But I'll let you take the floor here. Why do you have these two so high?
All right, well, both of these people, when I watched their video, were just charming as hell as far as I could tell. Jeremy's a firefighter, Val is a cop. I think they're both going to be absolutely fine fitting in with regardless of how their tribe draw goes. I think they're both like, I think the comparisons between Val and Ciri are getting tossed around, and it's pretty understandable why they do look quite a bit alike. But I think Val, while she has presumably not the social game and strategic game of Ciri, I think has a much better physical game. Like, she's a cop. She's going to be in good shape. She's not going to be an early boot threat. But I also think she's not going to be physically imposing enough, or at least not going to appear to be physically imposing enough to be a threat once she makes the merge.
Okay, well, superficial and probably racist comparisons aside, I think in a cast which doesn't really have anyone that seems too distinguished, Jeremy and Val, just by virtue of being kind of normal, smart people with their heads screwed on right, I think just have an automatic advantage over most of these people. And that's not to say that the two of them like are lackluster. I think both of them do have a lot of potential, but it's more kind of by default than because there's any one thing about them that I'm zooming in on.
There were only, I think, four players in this cast that I viewed as just like, at least upon first glance, just being naturals at the game, and these were two of them.
Okay, why is that?
I could see, because they seem like very laid back, and like they would have very good social skills, easy to, like, they come across as trustworthy, I would say, as odd of a kind of compliment to give them as that is. I also very much like, by the way, they prepared by, here's a genius idea. Don't eat very much if you're about to go on Survivor. Let your stomach get used to the idea of starving. And I can't believe that not everyone does that, but they did that. And I think that's going to come in handy. Yeah, so I just feel like they're going to have zero problems fitting in, or at least have less of a problem than anyone else left in the cast. I think they're going to be just fine. I also very, as we've seen before, they're willing to vote each other off. They may even look forward to the idea of voting each other off. I feel like I'm talking a lot and not listening much now about Jeremy and Val. So is there anything else you want to add?
Okay, well, Val would make that same criticism of Jeremy, who in their interviews was kind of talking over her all the time and always getting his points across. But I think that was just because he was so eager to say his piece. It wasn't because he like was trying to diminish Val's opinions or he didn't care what she had to say. He just seemed genuinely excited to be out there. And I think combine that with the fact that he does seem quite laid back, you know, just his personality, I think, is going to click with a lot of people.
Yeah, loving these two. I think after the premiere, I think both of these two are big candidates to have big premiere episodes because they seem like they're going to be fun characters, and I could see easily either of them going deep in the game.
Yeah, on your notes you have Val definitely won't be a physical liability, and on mine I have she seems nice, but I don't know if she's going to be good in the challenges. So what am I missing here? Like, what fact did I glaze over?
You may have been missing the B-roll of her banging off like 20 push-ups in a row.
I apparently did miss that, yeah. If that's the case, then, yeah, disregard everything I said, because that's the one area where I thought, you know, if she flunks a challenge early and then maybe she doesn't really fit in with people, then she could be gone. But if that's much less of a concern, then she seems to be sitting pretty.
Yeah, I'm not, at least I'm not at this point concerned about that remotely. I am very much looking forward to see these two. Are we ready to go back into the hat?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Ooh, very excited for these two. Kelly and Dale are the next items up for bids. Now, Dom and I, to kind of show the seams a little bit, we just paused this podcast because we forgot to do our draft before we got all of each other's insights into how we feel about this cast. And with the number one overall pick, Dom, you picked Kelly. So please tell me why.
I don't know. Part of it was like, drafting strategy where I thought there was some because I want Kelly on my board, but I thought there's some chance that she is your Hope Driscoll memorial something or other of the season and you're just gonna fall blindly in love with her and snipe her before I can take her. So I thought taking her with the first pick, I can maybe will the people that I actually want, and then, you know, I'm gonna have a pretty nice setup here. So but I took Kelly first, and then you took my actual first pick with your first pick, which I was incredibly tilted about, and so now I'm stuck with, well, I won't say stuck with, I'll try and make the best of it. I am privileged to have Kelly as the number one pick on my draft board. Just watching her interview, reading her bio, she strikes me as someone who is going to be like a hard worker. She's going to get along with people. She's in marketing. She's not going to rub anybody the wrong way. And she seems like she just knows what she's doing. And she's going to be able to keep her head about her under pressure. Just in general, like, again, I'm not saying that, oh, she's the one person. Like, in past seasons, there's always been like a Kim or a Denise or someone like that where you just immediately think, okay, this is someone who has a lot of talent and is going far. I'm not going to say the same thing about Kelly, but I think, again, in a season where no one really meets that qualification, she just seems to have a lot of the like the skills which, if you ask what do you need to be good on Survivor, she has all of those in kind of average or above average amounts.
Yeah, and I can't disagree with any of that. In watching her video, I did not anticipate thinking highly of Kelly, I should say. She is another of those, along with Jeremy and Val, she is the third of the four people that I think has very, like, could have very real talent for the game.
Yeah. That said, she did say the survivor she was most likely was poverty, because we never heard that before. And her
Who is it?
That's fair. And her pet peeves are lazy people, overconfidence, not sticking to your word, bad drivers, and angry people. Brackets, get over it already. So a lot of pet peeves here, which it seems like she needs to get over already.
One of my pet peeves is when you call parentheses brackets, just FYI.
That's her name, Colin. Get over it.
All right, well, let's talk a little bit about Dale. I think, because I'm with you on Kelly, I think she definitely stands out as one of the, at least based on the 3 minutes that we've seen of everyone so far. And again, we always come in here and we sound off and we make these big, bold proclamations, and we sound like idiots because we've only seen 3-minute clips of these people. But that's what we're here for. I guess that's what we do. So let's talk a little Dale. What do you think of Dale's 3 minutes? How are you going to judge him as an entire human being based on those 3 minutes?
Well, Colin, Dale didn't come here to make friends, apparently. So that tells you everything you need to know about him. I like Dale. But I get the sense that I'm the type of person who would like Dale, and he seems very non-offensive. But again, he is one of the older people in the cast, and I don't know if he is stuck on a tribe with, let's say, Wes instead of Keith, or, you know, some of the young people in the cast. I don't know that he can really mesh with them in the way that he would need to stay around, especially if he isn't putting his weight in challenges.
Yeah, that's definitely a major concern I have. I have some very real concerns about Dale. The first of all being is, the first of which being, his own self-described weakness would be the social game, which is not a good place to start as far as weaknesses are concerned. Although I did like, he compared himself to Big Tom, which is at least a deep cut, and it seems like he's familiar with the show.
Yeah, and I don't get the sense that it's because he's like actively unlikable or anything. It's more that he does spend his working life around the same small group of people, and so he doesn't really have to interact with people outside of that. That's not to say that he can't, it's just that he doesn't have to. And the fact that he's actually aware of that and is going to try and overcome it is at least a first step to doing so.
Yeah, I think Dale would be my dark horse candidate of the season, where I don't think he's more than like 5% to win.
Okay.
Oh, I guess that's about average percentage to win in an 18-player cast. But I think some people are like hard zeros, and I think some people are, you know, in the 15 to 20 range. And Dale, I think, could be that one guy that everyone's kind of underestimating that we actually see pull it through, kind of like a Bob Crowley scenario.
Yeah, I want Dale to do well. Not convinced he will, but, you know, if we get to the merge and he's still there, I doubt he's going to get voted out for a while, and then if he can sneak to, like, the final six or final five, and you have some bigger targets left in the game still, maybe Dale is likable, doesn't have much blood on his hands, can maybe sneak through to the end. It's a hard thing for him to piece together, though, so I'm going to want to see it happen, but I don't think that it will.
Yeah, the big story for me between these two is keep your eyes open for Kelly, because I think she could definitely be a contender. All right, let's get going on to the next pair. As I kill time while I'm once again unable to open this thing because I just cut my fingernails yesterday. Here we go. Oh, boy. Drew and Alec.
Okay.
Now, obviously the place to start, I know that Dom and I already know this about each other. Alec was the number two pick in the draft. He is my winner pick. I gather he is also your winner pick, which makes for terrible podcasting.
Yeah, I guess I'm kind of on Team Kelly now instead, but yeah, if you, my head says that Alec is at the top of the list preseason, because and maybe this is just because of the contrast with Drew, who we're going to get to in a minute, but I'm not a fan of Drew. I was a fan of Alec. I thought Alec just seemed very laid back, very kind of self-aware, and very just like open-minded for someone of his age, and he just seems like someone who you can very easily get along with. He's going to be an asset in challenges and around camp, and I think his issue is going to be maybe Drew and his antics are going to drag him down a bit by association, and also when we do get to the merge, Alec presumably is going to be one of the best in challenges, and so that's going to be an issue for people. But there are going to be quite a few people who are going to be competing with him, and I think Alec doesn't come across as overtly threatening in any other way, whereas some of the others do. Like, he's not going to be just getting on people's nerves, or no one's going to think, right, Alec is this big strategic threat, we have to get him out right now. People might be able to kind of justify delaying voting out Alec until later, at which point he just needs to win a few challenges at the right time and he's good to go. And that's assuming that he isn't just in the majority alliance in the first place, in which case I think he could be right at the center of that.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Is it fair in your mind to say he is kind of, at this point, like a poor man's Hayden Moss in a complimentary sense?
No, because I think Hayden was much more... he had his head in the game much more than Alec seemed to. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Alec doesn't take it as seriously as he might need to in order to win. Whereas Hayden, it was clear, was always in game mode and always trying to shoot every angle. But I think Alec, yeah, just in the same way of he's like this kind of young jock, he's athletic, he can get along with people. Yeah, I mean, in that sense, there's an obvious similarity.
Well, we're just very naturally talented is more what I meant. With I do see in Alec, I especially think once the game gets going, it's hard not to get into game mode when you're someone who I think has as much potential as Alec has. I think maybe if he's even not aware of it pregame, he's going to get into that game mode and actually be a real competitor there. I think Alec, the sky's the limit for Alec as far as I'm concerned. I think he's incredibly sociable. And again, maybe it may just be the juxtaposition between he and Drew, because I, like you, did not like Drew very much. But I think Alec definitely could showed some very serious chops, at least for what I would want to see preseason. And I have higher expectations of Alec than I do of anyone else in the cast, and I'm really looking forward to watching him and seeing what he turns out to be as a character, because I think he could be really funny too.
Okay, yeah. Well, let's talk about why we didn't like Drew then, and you can start here if you like.
Yeah, I mean, I really thought I was going to like Drew a lot more than I did, so it came across to me as especially harsh in that sense, where I was anticipating something and got just something so different that it was like double negative almost in the non like grammar rule sense, where it hammered it home even harder. That this was not someone that was going to be winning Survivor. I don't know. I think Drew has spent his whole life kind of in the bubble, as we've talked about before, like Dr. Drew Baird from 30 Rock, where he's had so much going for him and so much just general success in life that the idea doesn't occur to him that he might not be great at something. And I think he's going to find out perhaps very quickly that he's not that great at Survivor. I could see if he's on John Rocker's team, forget about it.
Yeah, he seems like the stretched out exaggeration of the frat boy douchebag archetype. And maybe he is so overwhelmingly douchey that it becomes full circle and seems kind of harmless again. But I don't know. Because like, if you read his bio, everything just comes across as so cringeworthy. Like, the one thing that jumped out to me first was this quote, "I'm a sales rep and I'm a model. My life is just so crazy." Like, in Survivor terms, that's nothing. Like, crazy is, I was raised by wolves, I taught myself English, I graduated from Harvard, I was an astronaut. You being a sales rep and being a model and then being found in some like Los Angeles bar somewhere, that's not interesting. That is standard fare at this point.
Know who he reminds me of?
Who?
Blake from Guatemala.
Yes. Although even Blake, like, Blake actually seemed kind of endearing in this, in the sense of like, he was obviously completely unaware of just how he was being perceived, but not in a way where you think, oh, this guy just seems totally awful in real life, whereas Drew actually kind of does. Almost, I mean, okay, he's a character on my TV screen, I don't want to say he's a bad person, but just this is the sense I get. One other quote I liked was, I see, like, the reason why you're going to be the sole survivor, quote, "I seem to pull off the unthinkable with ease. People ask me, how did you do that?" Which, if he does win Survivor, I will be asking that, because that does seem truly unthinkable.
Yeah, make your accomplishments seem effortless.
Yeah, Drew, not high on my list at all. One other thing that was funny, he was actually caught communicating with Jacqueline pre-game.
Oh, really? How did we know this?
There's a screenshot that someone posted on Reddit. Here we go. Yeah, Jacqueline posted a photo of her dog, and this was back in the middle of April, so I think before they actually flew out. And then Drew Chrissy posted on it saying, "Is that a lab or a retriever?" And that dog is clearly not a lab or a retriever, by the way. But yeah, so Drew posted that, and this was before they flew out. So I imagine they met during the casting finals and then got talking or whatever, and then added each other on Facebook, and it went from there. But I have to imagine that's a complete no-no, and I'm surprised that they actually got carried forward after that.
I can't believe that. Yeah, that is absolutely stunning to me. Who's finding these things, though? Who's going through everyone's likes on Instagram and comment on Instagram? It blows my mind. But yeah, that's, hey, I suppose when you find the needle in the haystack, that's a great find.
Yeah, I remember someone... someone went through Spencer's Facebook profile photos and found, like, this thing from 2011 where he put Boston Rob up and said, "I wish I was Boston Rob" or something. And someone just, like, unearthed it 4 years later and put it on Reddit. So I don't know who's finding these things. They must have... I say they must have nothing better to do as we're spending 2 hours talking about it, but, you know, that's what our lives have come to.
We're talking about them doing it. We're completely validating it.
It's even worse, yeah.
All right, so what more do we want to be saying right now about Drew and Alec, other than one good, one bad? Watch it flip around the entire other way. We're just getting totally faked out. I don't know. I don't see that happening.
No.
All right, are we good to move on?
Back to the hat.
Back to the hat, indeed. Let's open it up. Let's see what we got here. This one's taking forever to... man, this one's being a real bitch, so I'm... Oh, okay. I was thinking it was the 20s. It's not. It is Wes and Keith.
Okay.
I really like these guys. I want to jump right in. I think these two are fun.
Yeah, I like them a lot too. Not in a way that makes me optimistic about their chances, but just in terms of how they come across in their bios. Yeah, I was really taken by them.
Yeah, so these guys are the father and son firefighters. Also very willing to vote each other out. They seem totally like lighthearted and competitive with each other. I think these two are going to be a real treat to watch this season. I think Keith is like a much better version of Cowboy Rick, where he's the same kind of country personality, but with actual personality behind it.
Yeah, although apparently Rick was an actual riot in casting as well, so I don't know what happened to him there. But I don't see the same fate befalling Keith. Keith does seem to be very kind of just happy-go-lucky and just like someone who is going to be really fun to be around.
Yeah, no, I'm totally on board with Keith. I think perhaps like a bad challenge performance, much like we talked about with Dale. I have similar concerns where maybe he kind of doesn't fit in, but perhaps even more so with Dale. I think whoever's on his team is going to look at him and be like, hey, this guy seems solid as Sears, man. Like, I'm happy keeping this guy around for as long as we need.
Yeah. On the other hand, he could just be like the Jim Lynch of the season.
Sure. Yeah. That's totally fair. That's well within the realm of possibility. I'm very much hoping that doesn't happen. I think Wes and Keith are going to be a riot. Let's talk some Wes. I think Wes has actual... He's not in my big four of like very real chance to be a great player. But I think Wes has some southern charm to him that could find him some success. I'm not saying he's like JT, but I think he could certainly find himself in some good spots.
So I think Wes was cast to be like the Pete type for the season, where they're going to try to be the mastermind and not actually be the mastermind. I think he'll go about it in a more endearing way than Pete did, but not necessarily with better results.
That's interesting. Although I did... one thing that actually does lend some credibility to that theory is the contestants he compared himself to were Ozzy and Russell Hintz. So I actually am seeing where you're coming from that, just because it seems like anyone comparing themselves to Russell, I think, kind of like Tony last season, is someone who's really coming into the game there to play hard and probably there to play a little bit too hard.
Yeah, Wes, from what I gather, is actually a bigger fan of the show than those answers would suggest. But maybe those were just the two characters that he's most drawn to. Where it's like he's more, I wouldn't say he's more of a casual fan than a super fan, but like, you know, just given how many people are fans of Ozzy or fans of Russell, you're going to get some people cast on the show who are going to be fans of them even if they have followed the show for a long time.
Or maybe he's just such a super fan that he knew that he would ping on the radar of casting if he listed Ozzy and Russell.
Right. Or maybe he's such a super fan that he knew that those answers would tilt the actual super fans who are reading these bios, in which case, fair play to Wes. But I think the more likely thing is he's going to try and emulate Russell and not do it very well.
Yeah, I'm still waiting, just by the way, for a guy to go on there and say that the contestant they're most like is Parvati.
Yeah.
All right.
Or for like a girl to go on and say the contestant I most like is Russell because I'm going to take all of these dumb girls under my wing.
Yeah, so very much looking forward to both Wes and Keith. I think they're going to be great on TV. I think these two are home run casting, based on what I can tell.
Yeah, it's always interesting in a Blood versus Water season where, like, I imagine you cast these pairs, or at least they're drawn to your attention because of the dynamic that the two of them have together. And yet, given how they've split the tribes up the last time they did this, and presumably on this season as well, you're not actually going to get to see the two of them interact beyond just like fleeting moments of challenges for most of the pairs. So they have to be independently interesting. And so they solved that problem last season where you have returning players, and so you know who that player is. And even if you're not really taken by whoever their partner is, they're interesting insofar as they are that returning player's partner. Whereas here,
right,
you can't really have a pair where you have one interesting person and one dud, because that dud just isn't really going to add anything to the show, and they might not even get a chance to team up with their partner.
I don't think any pair stands out to me, apart from John Rocker, where they were purely cast for one of the two of them.
Yeah, but John Rocker is effectively a returning player for that purpose, where you have a star, and then you have someone who is tied to them and who probably wouldn't be cast on their own merits.
Okay, good point. So projections for Wes and Keith, do you think either of them could actually take this thing down?
I think Keith is not long for the game, and I think Wes... Wes strikes me as the type who, like, let's say he just gets to a swap or something, he's going to try and make a move to take control after a swap, and either that doesn't work, in which case he's out pretty quickly, or it does work, he gets to the merge, but then this kind of ramshackle alliance that he's built just falls apart, and he's like a second or third juror.
Yeah, okay, I think that's definitely a very viable scenario. I don't think either of them has much of a chance to win.
No, although I'll be very much enjoying watching them try, I think.
Yeah, so we got some big names left on the board here. All three of the stunt casting people are still left in the hat, or, you know, the ones that were hyped up as the stunt cast. I swear to you, this is not rigged whatsoever. It's not like we're just saving those people for last. I would never jeopardize the integrity of the hat to do something like that. And I do also want to say, while I'm unfolding this one, I am so glad that we're back here for the second consecutive season talking about something, a season that is completely unspoiled. Not that we've ever been spoiled on it, but just the knowledge that the season is unspoiled
is so incredible
once again, and I am so thankful for that. Okay. Oh, and I ripped the piece of paper. Here we go. Unbelievable. We got the three stunt casting people last, because here we go with Missy and Baylor.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, I don't actually have anything to say about them, I don't think, so unless you can fill the void there.
Well, okay. Hey, the mom is a cheerleading gym owner, and the daughter is, as luck would have it, a cheerleader.
Who would have thought, right?
Yeah. So when Dom and I were drafting, the way it worked out is Missy and Baylor and two other pairs were the bottom of the draft. Actually, we messed up.
Yeah.
We had to redraft. But effectively, six of the bottom seven were all six from three pairs.
Yeah, and then Missy and Baylor were the first pair to get broken up then at that stage, and I took Baylor and left Missy for last, and I wouldn't have taken Missy at any point if I had the choice.
Interesting. So you would have taken either of the 20s over Missy?
No, just because of like the moral statement that that would send, but like in terms purely of winner equity, I think Missy is right at the bottom.
Yeah, Missy was pretty annoying, and with all due respect to Missy, I don't see Missy being long for the game in pretty much any timeline, and if she is long for the game, she is very long for the game to the point of losing finalist.
Yeah, she didn't annoy me per se, but she said that she thought her social game would be unbelievable, which says a lot in itself. I completely disagree with her. I don't think it will be, and I think we are going to see that play out very quickly.
Right, and Baylor is apparently very competitive and wants to win every challenge, which, of course, I don't like.
Oh, shut up.
I don't fault you for picking Baylor once we got down to kind of the bottom of the barrel there for the draft. I think she was the obvious choice to be the sixth from the bottom off the board. And I did like that Baylor's willing to vote her mom out, but the mom won't vote the daughter out, which is, you know, whatever stereotypes that you want to reinforce with that or whatever. It's not surprising. I don't think any parent would vote their child out. Bottom line, no chance for either of them. I'm happy to move on. Okay, so we have Rocker, the 20s, and Josh and Reed left. Who's it going to be?
I hope it's Josh and Reed, just so we can save the best for last, worst for last. I don't even know.
We'll find out right now. It's going to be Rocker and Julie.
Okay. That's fine too. So you have a much better idea of John Rocker's background than I do. Obviously, I've read up on all of the controversial stuff that he's said and done, but you have the context there, so you get into that.
Okay, well, I do not have the context, but I'll tell you who does have the context and who I consulted about this before, because I wanted to offer some kind of informed commentary. Our good friend Gary Wise, he is a mega expert in baseball, in Major League Baseball. So I talked to Gary for about half an hour last night about John Rocker, and this is what Gary had to say. First of all, as a baseball player, just for those curious, he was a very good closer for a couple of years, but as closers do, he became very mediocre and had a great year in 99. And then after that 99 season is when he made the comments. And I think it's worth noting, first of all, I'm sure everyone's heard of the comments in question. You know, he was infamous in 1999. For comments he made in an interview with Sports Illustrated. He was only 24 years old at the time, which I thought he was like 30 at the time, because I never knew how old he was. I wasn't really a big baseball fan then. So what Gary told me is he was basically considered like a black mark or like a pariah within Major League Baseball by the time he was 24 years old. And his take on Rocker is that he's going to have major impulse control issues. But may have matured. And his exact words, I thought Gary, of course, puts it always very eloquently. He said, "I wouldn't put it past anyone to have the potential for growth, but I wouldn't count on it with John Rocker. Yeah, and another thing, actually, that Gary said is he thought he would be kind of like what we saw out of Cliff Robinson last season, where he was a big target, but he's good physically, and he kind of keeps his stride fine in challenges, but they're going to boot him once it gets to a certain point, and he's just not going to have the social game to overcome that. So I'm curious what your take on John Rocker is, because I know just having talked to you a little bit off air, and I'll be honest, I had the same idea. I thought Rocker came across almost well in this video.
Yeah, if I hadn't known who John Rocker was, then I wouldn't have come out of watching that video thinking, oh, this guy's a massive asshole and people are going to boot him the first chance they get. I would have said, this guy is obviously going to be a target just because of his appearance and he's not going to be able to escape that. But beyond that, I think he's actually going to do decently well. And I said the same thing about David Sampson last season, so maybe I should just stick with the consensus on that. But yeah, like in the dark, I would not have had the same read on John Rocker. So the hope would be, if nobody in the cast with him knew who he was, which I don't think is unlikely, because, I mean, I don't know myself, but I hear he was notorious enough that people would know, even if they only followed baseball very casually. But so people are going to know who he was. But if they didn't, maybe if he had truly reformed, there's a chance that he could just play without any of that past history coming back to tarnish him. As it is, though, I think people are going to know who he is, and that's going to create a very negative first impression. And it's going to be hard for him to overcome that, no matter how much it looks like he's changed since then.
Yeah, as far as whether or not people are going to recognize him, I am a very casual baseball fan. I would not have recognized Jeff Kent, and Jeff Kent was a perennial all-star for 20 years. I would absolutely have recognized John Rocker out there. Like, he was a major focal point of American news for a solid couple of months.
Okay, and two people who did recognize him were Val and Jeremy, who said they've seen that John Rocker's out there and they want to team up with him and his partner because they know that if one of them or the two of them can make it to the end with him, they've got $1 million locked up. And that's one reason, everything else aside, to be very optimistic about their chances. Not because that plan of taking John Rocker to the end is always going to work, but just the fact that they're willing and able to think that way is a very good sign for them.
I hadn't heard about that before, and kind of along those lines, have we heard anything about whether or not Rocker plans on concealing his identity?
I don't think he plans on concealing it. Obviously, he's not going to say, hey, guys, I was in the media for 5 months because I said a bunch of stupid racist shit. But I think if questioned, he is going to say, yeah, I played, I was an athlete in some capacity.
You're right. I think when you're in this position, if you're Cliff Robinson or Jeff Kent or Lisa Welcher or John Rocker, when someone says to you, hey, are you John Rocker? You're already, it's known. They know who you are. There is zero point denying it.
Yeah, you can't say you're John Hawkins anymore. It's not going to lie. Yeah, I think if someone says, are you John Rocker? Then obviously they know who you are. If someone says, hey, did you play baseball or were you an athlete? You know, maybe there's some kind of ambiguity there. But realistically, someone's going to recognize you. You have nothing to gain from concealing it. You may as well just be honest and at least be open and control how that's perceived.
Well, I think the one example where maybe they won't be onto you is Cliff Robinson exactly. No one's going to say, hey, did you play baseball? Because baseball players are 6 feet tall. When you show up there and you're 6'10", people might ask you if you played basketball and not know who you are. But no one's bringing up baseball unless they know who you are. All right. What are your thoughts on just that they cast John Rocker? Is this a desperate attempt to, like, I don't see how he's viewing and bringing in viewers other than just the potential for controversy. So do you think they would have cast him if they felt like he has reformed?
I don't think the question of whether he's reformed is a part of why they cast him. They cast him because of the controversy, and no matter what he's like now, that's going to create an interesting storyline based on that, where either he has reformed and you have this weird redemption story, which I don't think would actually be very interesting to watch, but who knows, or you have him continuing to just be this massive asshole to people, in which case that's obviously going to be good TV, quote unquote, in the very basic sense. So, you know, I don't think the question of his having reformed is really crucial to why they cast him.
I think it may be crucial, not to why they cast him, but in his own mind, where when he shows up out there and he knows he's going to be in this public spotlight, he may want to demonstrate, I'm not that same guy.
Yeah, and maybe they could only justify casting him in a public relations sense if they felt that he had reformed, where if you cast someone who is knowingly a former bigot, hopefully a former bigot on this scale, And then you go and cast him anyway. I think that creates a lot of backlash towards the show. Whereas if you have someone who was like that in the past, but now they can demonstrably show that they've changed, then I think people would find it easier to swallow. Although, to be honest, just the mere mention of having cast John Rucker will be enough to turn a lot of people off, I think. And those people aren't tuning into the show to see if he has changed or not.
Yeah. That's definitely fair. It's a risky casting choice, I think. Perhaps, I mean, is it safe to say, and probably it's not safe to say without putting real thought into it, but I'm going to do it anyway. The riskiest casting choice, maybe like Brandon Hance, the riskiest casting choice they've ever made?
Maybe. Like, just thinking back on the known public figures that they've had on the show before, like Lisa Welchel, we made fun of her about the whole corporal punishment thing, but no one really knew about that. Jeff Kent was not well liked, but not in the sense where people think you are irresponsible for casting him. And then you've had like Gary Hogaboom, Steve Wright, who, and like Grant Manos, who no one knew who he was anyway. Like, right. I think this is the first former athlete they've cast where there is actually a serious question of controversy about who he is.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting. I think that's probably, at least entering the premiere, the biggest story to be on the lookout for is how things are handled surrounding John Rucker.
Yeah, because like you said, we've had Brandon Hance come back, we've had Colton come back for a second time, but both of those were kind of problems of their own creation, where even if they had an inkling during the first casting process that they were going to be like that, maybe you could find a rationalization for putting them on anyway. Whereas with John Rucker, you know what you're getting when you cast him, right? You can't put him on your show and then claim to be surprised that there is a negative reaction to it.
Yeah. No, that's definitely fair. What are your thoughts on Julie?
Well, just one final thought on John Rucker. The cynical, pessimistic part of me wants to say they had to cast someone with this kind of notoriety because they knew that the rest of the cast was so lackluster by comparison. Right? You have some people who are likable, some people who, you know, it might be fun to watch, but no one who really leaps off the screen at you. And you need someone on the level of John Rucker to really, light the fire under the season.
I don't know. I feel like that is more the Brad Culpepper role, where you have it, because I don't know that John Rucker is going to go out there and really be super aggressive early on. And I think he is going to have to be one of the focal points of the narratives early on. And I'm just not convinced that they're going to be giving him, or that he's going to be giving them what people are expecting. Like, I don't think there are going to be a ton of fireworks surrounding John Rucker in the opening episode. And obviously, we could show up here to talk about the premiere and I could completely eat my words as he gets in a huge fight with one of the 20s or whatever.
Yeah, that's
like
a hope.
That's well within the realm of possibility. I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, the best case scenario is John Rucker spending the first 3 days just absolutely terrorizing Nadia, and that just devolved into a complete mess. But yeah, like I said before, I don't think it actually matters what he does once he's out there. It's the fact that he's out there at all is going to generate a kind of buzz that no one else in the cast can really hope to compete with.
No disagreement.
Okay.
So, thoughts on Julie?
Yeah, Julie's had to judge solely because of the Caleb Bankston principle, where going into their interview, you can't possibly be unbiased just because you know who their partner is and that they consciously chose to make a life with this person. And so that's always going to color your view of them going in. Julie, I think it's fair to say, wouldn't have been cast if not for the John Rucker connection. She just doesn't seem as kind of dynamic or as interesting as some of the other cast members. But I don't know. She's another one who I think could come across as like uptight or snobby, not because of anything that she's done, but because of how people want to perceive her. And the fact that people know that she is John Rucker's partner is going to be a big obstacle there. Like, she's not just fighting any bad first impression that she might create. She's fighting a known bad first impression that her partner's created for her.
I don't know how much success Julie could have on Survivor without John Rucker in the picture, if she would even get cast in that instance, which I think she may. I think she's at least somewhat interesting. I think she is overconfident and a bit full of herself. I could easily see her being one of the early boots. I don't think she's got a prayer of winning. But that being said, I do think she could find herself in like the middle of the action here, and whether that results in her being involved in the Majority Alliance early on or being the target of that, I think she's going to be at least in the mix in some capacity.
I think a big worry for her is feeling the need to step out of John Rucker's shadow and doing so in such a way that she offends other people or interferes with their plans or does something to put herself in the forefront of people's minds, but not in a good way at all.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to be optimistic about anyone whose partner is John Rocker.
Yeah, but we would have said the same thing about Caleb, and he proved to be a lot more successful in the game than we would have anticipated.
I suspect Julie is no Caleb when it comes to interpersonal dynamics.
Yeah, agreed.
Okay, so we got two couples left. Let's see who it's going to be. Here we go. Josh and Reed.
Yeah, okay, so Josh and Reed, I didn't really know what to make of these two. I have the feeling
you did know what to make of these two because you took them both very highly in the draft.
Okay, let's overlook that for now. My impression of Josh and Reed is that they're actually going to be more successful individually than they could be together. And that's going to go for the twinnies as well. I think by themselves, it's almost like I think they're going to act as a destabilizing influence on the other, where I think Josh, if you leave him to his own devices, could actually be very capable at the game. But when he has Reed there, even if Reed isn't doing anything inadvertently to sabotage it, just the fact that Reed's there and that he has to take his views into account, and maybe they're less sophisticated when it comes to the game or anything like that, I think that's really going to hamper him. And same thing for Reed, if he proves to be the more capable of the pair. And maybe that's just something you can say about pairs in general, given this twist, but I think it's especially true of these two.
I think Josh is absolutely, if he were left to his own devices, could be very capable within the game. I am far less optimistic about Reed.
Yeah,
I think Reed is going to be a disaster in this game.
I think my Josh pick was defensible. I have no idea what I was thinking with Reed. I guess it just seemed natural at the time. I don't know.
Yeah. What happened is in the draft, in Dom's second or third set of picks, he picked both Josh and Reed together. And Josh, I very much got on board with, but Reed, I think, went probably like 10 picks too high.
Yeah, and in fairness, like when you're watching the interviews, you only see the two of them together. And I think in theirs, Josh did the majority of the talking. So maybe I just let myself get into wishful thinking about Reed. But yeah, I really can't justify that. That was pretty bad.
So what do you make of them being, this is allegedly stunt casting, where I don't even know which one, was in Spider-Man on Broadway or something along those lines. This seems very thin to me.
Yeah, they are allegedly famous, I think is the way to put it.
All right.
Do we know which one that is? Is it Reed or
Josh? I don't.
We could probably find that out if we were so inclined.
Right, but once again, that would be something that good podcasters would know. I'm sure, listen, no one who's listening to this podcast is only listening to this preview podcast. Other people, I'll let them know which one was in Spider-Man.
That's right.
Okay.
So
they're big time Christians and they love Lisa Welchel. So as optimistic as I was about at least Josh before, they're starting to lose some points here.
Well, do both of them love her or is it Reed? Because I think Reed like monopolized the Survivor Your Most Liked question because he happens to be like Malcolm, Stephanie LaGrosa, Bob Crowley, and Lisa Welchel all at the same time somehow.
I think they both put Lisa Welchel as the person they most like.
Well, that's...
That maybe... That may be wrong. That may be inaccurate, but I thought I saw that.
I don't know. Like, obviously, that's not a good sign in and of itself. I think the big impetus for casting them is that both of them made a big deal about being gay Christians, and that's going to be, you know, if there are other gay people out there or other Christians out there, that's going to be an obvious source of tension. We don't have another gay couple. I imagine we do have some Christians because it's America, so there you are. But I don't know. I think Josh at least is going to get along with people. I don't know about Reed. And I think you're right that that's the key like schism there.
Yeah, I think the best thing that can happen for Josh is Reed is gone early.
Yes. Although, now that we don't have Redemption Island this season, there's no kind of tension there where like if Reed gets voted out, he's going to be pleading with Josh or anything like that. If Reed is gone, then Reed is gone. And Josh can, as far as you can when your partner's just been voted out as Survivor, you can hope to like wipe your hands clean and move forward.
Right. And by the way, yes, we've all seen Heroes versus Villains. We all remember the challenge where Colby's brother comes out. We don't need you to be tweeting, damn it, Reed, every Wednesday night this season, okay?
And yet people will, surely.
Okay. So I think that either of these guys going to be a winner. You think Josh can win? I think he can.
I think Josh can win, yeah.
All right, I'm on board with that. I'm going to open up this.
I have no like rational basis for that belief, but given that I'm forced into it now, I'm going to run with it.
Sure. I'm now opening this last piece of paper just so you can see for the record that it does in fact say Natalie and Nadia, and we were not just rigging this whole thing the whole time. Let's get into the 20s. I'm going to let you start because I don't really want to talk about them that much. I cannot wait for them to be gone.
And I understand why you cast them, because there are people like me out there who despise them, and there are people like on Survivor Sucks and elsewhere who absolutely love the 20s and think this is the best casting choice they've made in 20 seasons, and those people need to meet the same fate as well. But until
then... Oh, hang on. If you're one of those people, never listen to our podcast. Yeah. Tune out now. This is not the show for you.
And also, fuck you. What are you doing? Stop enabling them, okay?
Yeah.
This is going to be... This is going to be a fun ride for as long as these two are on there, because I'm going to be tilted, but hopefully tilted in a way that makes for good podcasting, because we're just going to be so angry that they're still there every single week that we're going to find like new ways to embarrass ourselves by insulting them.
Yeah, I've gone through several of the stages of grief. I'm now on acceptance, and I'm just hoping that, for the love of God, I know they're going to be there. There's nothing I can do about it. Please just be gentle on us. Please don't make it hurt.
Yeah, the toughest endurance challenge that anyone's ever been through on Survivor will be the audience trying to make it through this season if the two of them go deep, like beyond episode 5 or so. It's just...
It's. I don't want them getting any ideas about them bringing the 20s back for future seasons, so I'm almost hoping that Survivor's ratings go down like 10%, but I don't want the show to get cancelled.
Yeah.
So there's like, I want to find whatever the line is for as low as they can dip without the show going off the air.
I think the worst, like the darkest timeline would be if CBS wanted them to complete the trifecta by going on Big Brother, and we had the 20s 24/7 on our TV screen for the next 3 months or so during the long, hot summer. It would be just catastrophically depressing.
Yeah, some trickster from Sucks would go over and like just burn down the Big Brother house if that happened. Yeah, obviously neither of these two is going to win. I cannot wait to watch whichever of them is on a team with John Rocker try to deal with that scenario. Please never let anything like this happen to them to the show again. I cannot get rid of them fast enough.
For all the times that we fantasize about horrible things happening to Jane Bright, I would wish 1,000 more terrible fates on these two. They are, I'm sure they are wonderful people in real life. I just don't want to be exposed to them in any capacity.
I've always thought that Jane Bright and Nayanka were the clear bottom two people as far as Survivor casting has ever gone. Like, just easily my two least favorite ever. These two now make that the new big four. Not the big four of people with potential talent for this season, the big four of the worst casting ever.
Well, at least Jane and Nayanka were distinct and separate people. These two are terrible individually, and then they are more than the sum of their parts in the absolute worst way possible. Because,
yeah.
See, the depressing thing is, splitting them up is actually going to be quite good for them, I think, because individually, they might not be as obnoxious as they are when they're together, and so we might be forced to live with the two of them both surviving until the merge, because there's no real reason to vote them out, and then when they get to the merge, they'll just be on this reign of terror until they're broken up, which I hope happens very quickly.
It can't happen soon enough for me. I hope they both get medevaced day one.
Yes. Like, why did it have to be these nice young Asian girls? Why couldn't it have been these two?
Yeah, seriously. What the fuck? All right. Anything else? Neither of them's going to win. I don't think that's any kind of groundbreaking analysis. Let's talk a little bit. I think we've gone through all the pairs now. Let's talk about the return of Exile Island.
Yeah, this was a surprising thing. Am I right in saying they threw this in last minute?
I believe they threw it in with 2 or 3 days before production, before filming started.
Right, because we know that they've built this arena where the duels are going to take place. And I imagine they had that left over it to some extent from when they filmed Redemption Island back like 4 years ago now. But obviously they would have had to rebuild it. But I imagine they had had designs on doing Redemption Island again or doing something involving that arena. And then they cancelled it and thought, well, we've done this now. We may as well find some kind of use for it. And then settled on bringing Exile Island back.
Right. What happened was they were originally planning on... Probst went on EW and told Dalton Ross, yeah, Redemption Island's back, and then they had to change it when the pair dropped out.
Yeah, the sad thing to me is, from what it sounds like, they didn't suddenly realize all like the theoretical downsides of Redemption Island, and they didn't they didn't look at the empirical evidence for just how bad it has been in the past. They just decided, hey, I don't feel like it this season. With the implicit message that they might feel like it again next season or two seasons down the line.
Oh, I'm sure they feel like doing it again. I don't think Blood vs. Water is going to be going anywhere, and I think it'll be coming back with Blood vs. Water. We have never talked about an Exile Island season. How does Exile change things in your mind?
Well, I don't think it really does, and that's the curious thing about it, where most other twists that they implement affect the game in some way, where... And, okay, they're going to have an idle clue there, presumably, or something around that, but, like, Redemption Island... like offers a chance for people to come back into the game, or a lot of these twists have this immediate material impact on the game that forces people to try and play around it. With Exile Island, that doesn't really take place at all. It's just someone goes out there, you have a few minutes of footage in the episode of them crying and trying to brave the elements, and then they come back and nothing really changes usually. And okay, sometimes you get, like in Token Chains, where you have the cross-tribal Exile Island, which was kind of cool for the first half of the season, and then... I believe sometimes they've had the person who goes to exile misses a vote, and sometimes that could end up being important. But I think in general, unless they find some new and creative way to implement it, I don't think it's really going to add anything.
I think they could be at least potentially finding a new and creative way to mix up Exile Island, because I really liked it in Token Chains where you had that opportunity for the cross-tribal alliance where you have one person from each tribe going. And I think that is going to be the case in this instance as well, where... whoever wins picks someone to go with the loser to Exile Island from their own team. Or so two people are going to be going to Exile Island again from opposite tribes.
Yeah, I'm sure there's going to be some kind of drama around whose loved one gets picked by another person's loved one and so on and so forth. But yeah, it's going to be one of those twists where the twist itself doesn't really mean anything. It's more of the social dynamics that will spring up around it, if any.
Right. Yeah. I for one, at least, am happy to see Exile Island back. I thought, while it doesn't do a ton, it's at least interesting. Like, Coach on Exile Island is one of the finest segments the show's ever seen. Not that we're going to get anything like that. It's not like Rocker's going to have some existential crisis off on Exile Island.
Although if he did, that would be pretty good as well.
Yeah, sure.
Or just, like, footage of, like, Nadia trying to evade being eaten by a crocodile or something. I could go for that.
I'm rooting for the crocodile. So, in some capacity on Exile Island this season, one person from each tribe is going to wind up there, much like we saw in Token Chains. What's your take on this? Is there some way to be manipulating this twist to your advantage if you are one of those people? Is the idea of a cross-tribal alliance a good one in this type of season, or what?
Yeah, I'd have to know more about exactly how that's going to work, but my first inclination is to say we've kind of seen... every dimension that there is to Exile Island by now, because we've had like 5 or 6 seasons with it in place, and so it's not like there's some new twist to it unless we're missing something that's going to be like a breath of fresh air. It's just going to be the same Exile Island that we've seen so many times now. And okay, sure, like the people who have come to the show in the past 4 or 5 years won't have seen it, and it has been that long or more since we've seen it ourselves, but that doesn't really make it any more interesting, I don't think, or any more fresh.
Yeah, I think the idea that it's just been so long since we've seen it, what's it been, 5 years since we've seen it? That's the only argument one could make about Exile Island. Oh, this is the fresh twist now. We've seen it.
Yeah, and also, Exile Island, to be interesting as a concept, runs counter to the direction that they're taking the show. Because I feel like for it to be interesting, it has to be about these solitary counter moments where you have one person by themselves, isolated from all the other action that's going on in the game and elsewhere, and it's just like a study of how they react in that one situation. But the show really doesn't care about that stuff anymore. It's all about, you know, people looking for idols and strategizing and everything else, and so they don't really have time to waste, as they would say it, on just a scene of one person crying or struggling to brave the elements or anything like that. It's just, that's really not what they're going for nowadays.
Right, and I think the idea of Exile Island, like, sure, on paper, being separated from your tribe for a day and a half is not where you want to be. You don't want to be by yourself. You want to be back where the action is. That said, I think like the 24-hour solitary confinement on Big Brother is a much worse punishment than 2 days away on Exile Island in Survivor.
Do you mean worse in the sense that it's more strenuous for them, or it's worse to watch on the show, or what?
It's worse for the person who has to endure it as a penalty within the game.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And also, it's just kind of weird conceptually as a twist, because it's like you're creating this microscopic version of Survivor, where instead of having 18 people in this grand set spread out over an island, you have one person in this kind of narrow space doing the same kinds of thing, and yet you don't have the things that make the game and the show like the compelling whole that it is, where you have the game going on, you have everything else, and you have these conversations between people. It's just one person sitting there on an island, and they're not really doing anything.
Right, there's no one to talk to. There are no challenges to be played. There are no votes to cast.
Right, it's like if you took the survival aspect of Survivor and then removed the interesting things that it leads to, which is the tension that it causes between people and seeing how they interact and how they respond to those challenges. It's just you get to watch one person either succeed or fail, and that's okay. That's kind of interesting in small doses, but we're going to have this taking up probably 5 minutes of every episode over the course of a 12 or 13 episode season, and that's really not going to last. I don't think you can draw that out into anything interesting.
One thing they could do to spice it up, at least for the beginning of the season, is go back to their roots and do what they did when they first introduced Exile Island and make it publicly known that the hidden immunity idol is on Exile Island, and then people have to be really careful about who they send.
Yeah, I think the issue there is whatever value you can then get from Exile just becomes reduced to watching that person go and look for the idol, which I guess isn't that much worse than the alternative, but it kind of negates the need for the concept in the first place. But in any case, it sounds like they can't really do that this season because the idols are hidden back at camp. So from what I gather, they get the clue to the idol when they lose a duel and get sent to Exile, but it's not related to Exile because the idol isn't there. So you won't see them like scrambling around on their own in the dark looking for it. It's going to be when they get back to camp, now they have to find a way to distract people while they scrabble around the fire or wherever it's going to be.
I wonder if that's going to be presented to them, and it must. If everyone's off watching, you know, they have this duel and the loser goes to Exile Island, Jeff's probably then going to immediately hop down and hand them a clue. Is the onus going to be on them to publicly burn it?
That's interesting.
I think it is. I think it has to be.
Why'd you say that?
Just gun to my head with the precedent that we saw during Blood vs. Water. Especially if I'm the first one to lose the duel and I'm not counting on one clue getting me anywhere, I'm setting the precedent that, hey, we're going to be burning these motherfuckers. We're not. No one here is going to be finding idols with clues.
Okay, sure. Although, actually,
at least that's what I would hope.
Well, I think it's going to seem like, because when they did it before, the issue was someone would win the duel and then they would get to give the clue to somebody. And it kind of felt like that person hadn't really earned it, or the person who was giving the clue away could do so with some kind of ulterior motive in mind. Whereas here, it's like, you've just lost this challenge and now you're going to Exile. And the clue is like a consolation prize, if anything. And so there's not going to be the same kind of pressure on people to give it away or to just get rid of it entirely.
But there is going to be the same kind of stigma on the person who has an idol clue that, hey, this person's likely to have an idol. And I don't really want a consolation prize in the form of a punishment.
There will definitely be that suspicion, and it's always going to be there for as long as clues are in the game, but there's not going to be that same kind of social stigma against it this season, I don't think.
Okay. I mean, I think if the first person burns it, everyone's got to burn it.
Maybe.
Unless they're blatantly on the outs, in which case I have no problem keeping it.
Well, I'm not sure how many of these people, even the ones who have seen Blood vs. Water, would be inclined to burn the clue if they were the first one to get it. Like, okay, you burn the clue if everyone expects you to burn the clue a lot of the time, but if no one's wanting you to do that, then it is going to look even more suspicious, if anything, if you burn it for no reason.
I don't know about that. I think you can easily say, hey, look, I don't want this on me. I don't want anyone thinking I've got the idol. I'm not even looking for idols. Don't worry about me. Here's how much I don't care about idols. I'm burning the clue.
You could spin it that way, but you could also say, look, if I'm in an alliance with this person, they could have brought the clue back to us and shared it with the group, and then we could have kept the idol within our group, but instead they just chose to get rid of it for no apparent reason, and now we can't control where that idol goes. Maybe someone outside the alliance gets it, maybe it just remains unhidden. Either way, they're doing that for their own reasons and not for reasons that benefit us as a whole.
Okay, but I'm a very selfish player, I would say, so I would just hope to not be... I think long run, the plus EV move is to burn the clue if you're the first one.
Fair enough. I don't think it's something that's worth dwelling on too much, but
no, I don't either. I think it's marginal. Okay. Dom, what more do we want to be talking about season 29?
One question I had, I guess, was the last time we saw this tried, there was always this question of, well, you know who these returning players are, and so if you have that person's partner on a tribe with you, you're going to be wondering if at the merge they're just going to run back and join their partner. And our default assumption there was the partners are going to go back and join the returning players, just because, leaving aside whatever dynamic there is between them, that person has more experience, they're more likely to be in a solid alliance on the other side, and they can make a convincing case. Look, I've been here before, I know what the deal is, if you come with me, we can make this work, whereas if I go over to you, I don't know these people and I can't really work with them. And that's going to be a convincing argument most of the time, and so I think that was the case for most of them. Whereas here, like, let's say I have Alec on my tribe and I know that Drew's over there. Well, what do I know about the dynamic between Alec and Drew? Like, you might say, well, Alec seems like the kind of beta type, whereas Drew's the alpha male, so maybe Alec would go along with him. But then maybe Alec is smart enough to know that he can get Drew over and that Drew's dumb enough to believe him, or anything like that. You don't really know exactly how that's going to play out. So that argument that you would have deployed before of, okay, we have to get rid of this person because they're definitely going to rejoin their ally at the merge, and that person's going to have an alliance on the other side, that doesn't really exist in the same way anymore.
No, I'm totally with you. I hadn't thought about it that way. And I think between that idea where there is no kind of built-in alpha dog within each pair, coupled with the knowledge that we have about how happy, seven out of the nine pairs are to vote each other out, I think by the time we hit a swap, if we do swap, or a merge, whatever we do merge, I think we could see a lot of shifting going on, even just round-to-round shifting. Like, if a couple's alliance forms, but they're just the minority with a couple of, like, latchers on, who then finally understand, hey, all the singles people left have to go, kind of like what we saw on Blood versus Water, and team up together and get rid of all these pairs on season 27. I think there are a ton of different timelines here that could play out. And I think this cast, as pessimistic as I was just based on looking at them, I think because they are all so willing, I think, to vote each other out, I really think that's an understated point. I think this season could go a ton of different ways at the merge. I think we could have some really exciting episodes.
Yeah, and also, because you don't have those metagame considerations that you do have inevitably when you have returning players, you don't really know what the state of affairs is going to be on the other tribe. Because before, if you're doing your homework, and by doing your homework I mean if you've talked to your partner, you're going to know, okay, on the other side, like if I'm Vetus, okay, Aris has Tina and Jervis, and so I need to keep their partners around to make that happen, or at least that's an idea you can go with. Whereas here, like, if I have Alec on my tribe and Drew's over there, well, I don't know if Drew's on the outs, or if he has something really good going over there. So do I keep Alec? Do I vote out Alec? I don't know. And you can't. It's such a difficult guessing game now where you don't really have anything to go on. So unless at a challenge or at a duel you see something that makes you think a certain way, you're really going to have nothing to work with there. So maybe that takes the skill out of it in a way, because you are just playing a guessing game, but maybe it does help the more perceptive people as well, because if you can pick up on those tiny clues and kind of reverse engineer what might be going on over there, you have everything you need potentially to make the right decisions for yourself moving forward.
I think it's a much more interesting game when no one knows each other and no one knows who's working with whom over on the other tribe. I think Blood versus Water with all newbies has, at least theoretically, a much better shot in the dark if we get some capable and interesting people out there than even Blood versus Water with returning players. So I think it's so much of it is automatic. One person, the returning player is the dominant one within the pair. Plus, they all know each other and have pregame alliances from when they all knew they were doing casting together. Whereas here, the only real pregame alliance I can tell was whatever the one you talked about was, or the Instagram alliance. Yeah. So I'm loving the idea of, at least in theoretical terms, of Blood versus Water with all newbies. And I'm much more so than I was anticipating, really excited about this cast to see how it goes.
So how does all of that change the strategy for you then? So leaving aside the specifics of any particular players on your tribe, going into the game, what are you thinking in terms of this is how my alliance has to be built, these are the things I need to be watching out for, and so on.
Okay, I'm thinking there are several things that I think just no different than in any Survivor season, like, that you need to be watching out for. When it comes down to this is how I want to build my alliance, it's much like obvious. It's going to sound obvious, but you want to leave yourself as much flexibility as possible when building your alliance. You want to be on good terms with even the people that aren't in your alliance, because when you get to a swap or when you get to a merge and people that you know have been working with other people's loved ones that you weren't working with, you're going to want to have room to play there. And I think that's going to be what's going to be – that's how the game is going to be won, is who's at that critical juncture – can find themselves like who has the maneuverability to put themselves in the position to win at the merge or at final nine or final seven or where, you know, all of those critical points. It's going to be who's got the relationships to capitalize on those spots. And I think that's the number one priority for me, is flexibility.
Yeah. And if you're going into a merge where you know that you can't really predict anything, and that there are so many different permutations of how things could go, you don't want to be tied to anything. You don't want to be seen as the figurehead of any given group. You don't want to be anchored to someone who you know is going to stop you from working with people. And so that might actually be a benefit to someone like Josh, for instance, who, if Reed is there maybe putting a wrench in things, that's going to really damage his game. Whereas if Reed gets voted out before and now Josh has the freedom to play as a singleton, then he can do whatever he wants and go wherever he needs to go to make that happen.
Right, and as far as mentality is concerned, you said, you know, you need to not be tied to anything or not be the figurehead of anything. I think you need to be not emotionally tied to anything. I think especially, as hard as that may be in a blood versus water season, which is why the people who've lost their partner early tend to have such an upper hand once we get to the middle and end game, is you really need to be embracing that the game is going to be up in the air for quite a while, and figuring, you need to be constantly thinking, and again, this is all true for most Survivor seasons, but I think even more so in this one where the game is going to be in such constant flux, that you really need to be keeping an open mind about working with as many different people as possible. All right, well, that was quick. For the first time maybe ever, a very quick season preview podcast.
Indeed, yeah. I don't even know what the runtime is going to be, but like an hour and a half or something? Maybe not even that.
I'll take the under on an hour and a half, yeah. I guess one thing just for posterity's sake, let's run down the teams that we drafted.
Please
Dom's
don't.
Team is, Dom's team is Kelly, Josh, Reed, John with no H, not John Rocker, John, Tim Tebow, John, and his girlfriend Jacqueline, Baylor, John Rocker, Missy, and Natalie of the 20s. My team, drum roll please, this is the best team I've ever drafted, bar none, and I'm going to kill myself if I lose this. Alec, Jeremy, Val, Wes, Keith, Dale, Drew, Julie, and Nadia. Dominic, I think that's going to do it.
Yeah, an all-star lineup right there. And don't be surprised if in 2 or 3 months this podcast just gets mysteriously deleted from iTunes as I'm expunging any record that this draft ever happened.
And yeah, just speaking of iTunes, anyone who hasn't done so already, subscribe on there to make sure you don't miss any of our future episodes. Dom, anything else?
Yeah, we have kind of a love-hate relationship with iTunes, where we hate it and it hates us, and then all the love just goes out the window. But for now, at least, it does seem to be working. So yeah, subscribe on there and you'll get all of our future episodes, and then you probably won't, and then we'll have to tell you about it on Twitter, but then you can continue following it however you like.
I think that's going to do it. So guys, thanks once again for listening, and we will talk to you very soon. Enjoy Survivor 29, the premiere. We'll be back to talk more after that. Take care, everybody.